The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
When I was at Findhorn, I met this extraordinary English tree expert who had devoted his life to saving trees. Just got back from Washington, lobbying to save the redwoods. He's 84 years old. He always travels with a backpack because he never knows where he's going to be tomorrow. And when I met him at Findhorn, he said to me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "New York." He said, "Ah, New York, yes, that's a very interesting place. Do you know a lot of New Yorkers who keep talking about the fact that they want to leave but never do?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And he said, "Why do you think they don't leave?" I gave him different banal theories. He said, "Oh, I don't think it's that way at all." He said, "I think that New York is the new model for the new concentration camp, where the camp has been built by the inmates themselves, and the inmates are the guards, and they have this pride in this thing they've built. They've built their own prison, and so they exist in a state of schizophrenia, where they are both guards and prisoners, and as a result, they no longer have, having been lobotomized, the capacity to leave the prison they've made or to even see it as a prison." See, actually, for 2 or 3 years now, Chiquita and I have had this very unpleasant feeling that we really should get out. That we really should feel like Jews in Germany in the late 30s. Get out of here. Of course, the problem is where to go, because it seems quite obvious that the whole world is going in the same direction.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, June 15, 2023. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
As our second opener in a row, from the movie My Dinner with Andre suggests, yes, the whole world is going in the same direction. But what direction is that? And does it have a name? Does it have a description? Does it have a label? And does this label or name have any value or serve an essential purpose? Those are just a few of the questions we'll be addressing in our own expansion of the Great Awakening discussion that we began last week, when we argued that awakening to tyranny requires awakening to freedom, and this is all part of that same process. Because there's another Great Awakening beginning to stir, about a singular problem that I have been trying to awaken others to myself, and it's namely what I've been calling the problem of the broken political compass. And the broken political compass is the fake political spectrum by which most people politically define themselves, much to their own detriment and to the detriment of others. As we shall illustrate right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, of course, the answer to our opening question regarding the direction in which the world is heading should be obvious. It's just left. Yet even though people use that term frequently and unavoidably, few are cognizant of what that label truly means and why. What does it mean to be on the left? Most people today have accepted a political fraud known popularly as the political spectrum. And the two ends of that spectrum are defined as left and right. And between the left and right binary polarities is an imaginary straight line that is said to be representing the spectrum, the political spectrum. And from left to right, the five fundamental degrees, quote-unquote, along that spectrum are radical, liberal, centrist, conservative, and reactionary. So that means on the extreme left, you've got radical, on the extreme right, you've got reactionary. Left of center, liberal. Right of center, conservative, and of course in the center, the centrist. That makes sense. Now you'll see this description illustrated in diagram form on the blog post of Just Right number 510, originally broadcast 6 years ago this month on June 22nd, almost to the day. But here's a problem, as we described it then, and I quote, both in theory and in practice. These ideological representations and others like them are wrong. They do not reflect political reality, and demonstrably so. Yet, they continue to be taught in our schools and used as a standard method of contrasting the quote-unquote political spectrum. This has caused untold confusion in the minds of millions and perhaps has played a greater role than most would expect in the accelerating and tragic drift to the left, towards communism and fascism, end quote. So that's where I'm going to leave it for now, as we take our first step towards demonstrating this confusion and how it manifests itself in common conversations and discussions. Now, the initial step in this process occurs when people reject and begin to question the definitions of left and right, as they have been presented to us in popular culture. And we've got a couple of great recent examples, both from June 8th, of that very process where, on the return side of our upcoming bumper, we'll be hearing from Colonel Douglas McGregor in conversation with Dr. Olga Ravasi, while on this side of our bumper, Stephen Crowder and his gang find themselves coping with their own right-wing extremism.
Op-eds at CNN mentioning right-wing extremism. By the way, everyone here, hey, who's a right-wing extremist?
I guess me.
I guess everyone here? No. Everyone here? Yes. I know Brian doesn't want to raise his hand, but you
what?
Are. You are. Everyone is. Everyone is. If you believe in the Constitution, you believe in freedom of speech, you're a right-wing extremist.
Yeah, freedom of speech. So free markets.
There are op-eds mentioning seven at CNN op-eds mentioning right-wing extremism. Now, guess how many mentioned left-wing extremism? Like, I don't know.
Should be a lot.
Burning stuff down.
Yeah, BLM riots.
Five-finger discount
like
up to $999 in San Francisco. Poop in the streets.
There you go. Open borders.
Zero. 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 Let me give you some examples before the midterm elections, May 2022. Here's a opinion. It won't be long before extremists in the GOP make Trump look tame.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Huh.
June 22nd. This is CNN. All the overlays are available. This is an opinion piece. Eric Raton's ad typifies GOP extremist attitudes towards violence, August 2022. Republican extremists defending Trump could complicate their party's chances. You're the ones trying to complicate the chances, just to be clear. And not to mention their coverage based on race. I remember when the teenager Ralph Yarl was shot in Kansas City. They covered it absolutely nonstop. 57 mentions in 48 hours. Wow. They did not give you the full information of the story. The Chicago riots during that same period, 9 mentions during a 48-hour period.
Wow.
So,
God.
By the way, far more dead and far more people with melanin in their skin dead. Yet, this is the issue. They don't care. And by they, I mean the left. I mean the media, entertainment, political, industrial establishment. Mm-hmm. They don't care about you, black, white, yellow. You are useful pawns. And they have to keep this alive. 5 times, at least, close to 6 times the mentions of one incident that they could use for race baiting. And by the way, just last week, in case you've forgotten, CNN described the Hollywood, Florida shooter. By the way, I don't know if you remember this. There was a picture available.
There were, yes.
It said that he was wearing a black short-sleeved shirt and camo shorts. Yeah. They only mentioned the things that he could immediately discard, like Clark Kent in a phone booth. He has a T-shirt and shorts. Oh, my God. What's his height?
In
we don't
Florida?
Know.
Yeah. Not a down jacket?
How about his bill?
And a scarf?
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. Doing that with a police sketch
part
artist.
Part of this is we've not defined well enough what an extreme leftist is, right?
Like, it's the entire Democratic Party.
There you go.
I agree.
That's
another
thing. Yeah. Abortion up until and including birth period.
They're the unreasonables.
It's completely beyond the pale.
That's right.
When they say, the founding fathers fought for your freedom. Hold on a second. But here's the problem. When people say, let's find a... I don't care if you're left or right, just don't lie to me. Let's stop trying to find common ground based on a lie, because the left will find outrage at anything.
Right.
You guys have been following Bud Light, right? They've also been getting flack from the left, right? They were officially stripped of their LGBTQ+ rating by the Human Rights Campaign
because
they don't stand up enough to the boycotts. So Bud Light is getting it from all sides right now.
I love that.
Target? Really. Target. You think of Target? As Pravda for right-wing extremism, they're getting backlash because of removing child-based LGBTQ products. Here's the Human Rights Campaign President Kelly Robinson saying, Target should put the products back on the shelves.
By the way, Target didn't get rid of the clothing. They just moved it in the store. It's like getting pissed off at placement.
Yeah, they said, hey, you know what? Can we take that giant dildo and maybe not have it by the Tinker Toys? Like, that seems reasonable.
Put it
in a less visible section.
Why try and appease these people?
I know. The section's called Tucked.
Yes.
not your shirt. Now, here's the thing. You're right. There's no appeasing. Because I think they're interested in destruction.
Right.
I really
do. Of course.
So how do you appease a group of people that are actually way more interested in destruction so they can rebuild the institutions that all of us have come to know as the foundation of America in their own image?
Yes.
Which is essentially a Marxist one.
No, you're absolutely right.
So.
They're never going to side with you. You have people who don't agree with a capitalist system, generally speaking, anyway. It doesn't matter what you do. You really think CNN, their problem is that they're being too right-wing? Don't allow the gaslighting to take place. I bring you tidings of great joy. You're winning. You are winning in the day-to-day. You can't do a whole lot about the debt ceiling after the vote. What you can do is vote with your dollar and your viewership. And so their only pushback now is to tell you you're wrong, to tell you that the country is further left. You just heard that from Anderson Cooper. And, of course, push for legislation that will censor your point of view out of the public digital town square. So let me know how you're fighting back on a day-to-day basis. And let me know if you feel it. The winds are changing. The winds are changing.
The adults are starting to come into the room.
I think we all understand the depth of corruption that keeps coming up from the Biden administration. And you have mentioned some of the same faces that have appeared in the 1990s in Yugoslavia, in the Balkans. Yes, they were younger, but they created their entire legacies, political legacies on what happened in Yugoslavia. And here they are back again, part of the Biden administration. We look at this Hunter Biden laptop from hell and the connections to Ukraine and to many different areas in the world. There was an informant that came forward, and the FBI has the information that the Biden family is deeply corrupt, has received millions of dollars from foreigners during Barack Obama's presidency. And the FBI just told us, and I really need this to kind of settle in with all of us. The FBI told us that they cannot protect the informant that came forward with this information. And they have informed our congressional representatives of this. How is this possible?
The people who currently govern us and populate the federal agencies, the executive branch, are ideologues of the left. The problem with ideology is it is treated ultimately like a religion. And the unfortunate tendency is to make the following statement. I'm correct. I, as a leftist ideologue who runs the FBI, who runs the CIA, who runs the National Security Agency, who is running the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, whatever, I am right and I am morally superior to everyone else. If you disagree with me, then you are morally wrong. I am always morally right. That translates into permanent government. This is how we ended up in Bolshevik Russia, with the dictatorship of the proletariat. The left voted itself into power in the United States and has every intention of staying in power. And it's a mistake to look at it from the standpoint of the two parties, because this new dictatorship has lots of support from people call themselves Republicans in the status quo Republican Party and organization, which is beginning to look a lot like controlled opposition. And for those of you who remember the Sovietized states in Eastern Europe after World War II, other parties other than the Communist Party or the ruling Communist Party, whatever it was called, were allowed to exist, but they were controlled opposition. There were limits in terms of how far they could go and what they could say and so forth. We're beginning to see that on the Hill. And you end up with a small minority of people on the right who are standing up and saying, well, this is wrong. This is not consistent with constitutional law. This is not consistent with the culture and the history of the United States. And they're simply being ignored. So I don't think anyone who has heard this from the FBI about what we call whistleblowers or, as you say, informants. And just so people understand, this is not an espionage case. This is not someone who is working against the government. On the contrary, this is someone who comes forward and says, listen, I've been in this organization for 20 years or 30 years or 15 years. I know what's right. I know what the regulations say. I know what's wrong. These people are doing things that are wrong, and reporting that to the legislative body and urging them to take action. I mean, it's quite legitimate. And suddenly, you know, the head of the FBI or the head of the Justice Department is essentially saying, well, they're on their own.
Incredible.
We can't protect them, which tells you that the men in charge are ideologues who've decided they're right, everyone else is wrong. Nothing matters but what they believe. And either you agree with them or you are the enemy. This is a terrible, terrible dilemma. And it's something that we have not historically faced very often in our history. It's not going to end well for any of us in the United States. But this is part of the paralysis that grips us in foreign and defense policy. We're on a path over which we Americans have very little influence at this point.
On a path of unelected bureaucrats, both in the United States and Europe, terrorizing the world population.
But remember, they are also being supported by lots of elected officials who are enabling them.
True.
They may not be driving it, but they're enabling it for the very reasons you point out. Because you would think in Congress, regardless of party affiliation, people would be outraged.
Yes.
They aren't.
And they're not. And that is the fear, I think, for all of us, come 2024 or any election, no matter who we elect, if we elect them, the permanent bureaucracy or whatever, if we wish to call them the deep state, the permanent state will always rule over us unless something changes.
Well, something's got to change.
I hope so. Colonel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Olga. Appreciate it.
Colonel Douglas McGregor is quite right when he says that something's got to change. But in the absence of a functioning political compass, change to what? The people who currently govern us are ideologues of the left, he correctly observes. But instead of calling on the ideology of the right, the ideology of freedom and capitalism, as the antidote to the ideologies of the left, all he can offer is that this is a terrible dilemma, part of the paralyzing crisis in which we are in. Yes, it is a dilemma, faced by all people who are lost at sea without a compass, guiding them in the right direction to their desired destination. But then he makes the classic error, which is detrimental to the right, by concluding that the problem with ideology is that it is like a religion. You know, I even hear religious people criticize woke and the left for acting like a religion. His argument, shared by many, is that because a set of beliefs is packaged as an ideology or like a religion, it is therefore problematic and leads to dictatorship and notions of superiority. But I don't think that's true. As Ayn Rand wrote, quote, "A political ideology is a set of principles aimed at establishing or maintaining a certain social system. A majority without an ideology is a helpless mob, ready to be taken over by anyone. Political freedom requires much more than the people's wish. It requires an enormously complex knowledge of political theory and of how to implement it in practice. Anti-ideology consists of attempts to shrink men's minds down to the range of the immediate moment, without regard to past or future, without context or memory, above all without memory, so that contradictions cannot be detected and errors or disasters can be blamed on the victims. Thus, men's moral criterion becomes not my view of the good or of the right or of the truth, but my gang, right or wrong." End quote. And as someone known for her opposition to religious, quote, "belief unsupported by or contrary to the facts of reality and the conclusions of reason," end quote, Ayn Rand nevertheless reminded people that, quote, "religion is an early form of philosophy, that the first attempts to explain the universe, to give a coherent frame of reference to man's life and a code of moral values were made by religion. And as philosophy, some religions have very valuable moral points. They may have a good influence on proper principles to inculcate," end quote. So the real problem then is not ideology or religion as such, but with the nature of the particular ideology or religion. Does it sit on the left, where its ideology is unsupported or contrary to the facts of reality? Or does it sit on the right, where the facts of reality and the conclusions of reason are the formula to arrive at truth? More to come on the ideological front, but first, The awakening that was being demonstrated on Stephen Crowder's show was somewhat refreshing to see. "We have not defined well enough what an extreme leftist is," said one of the panelists. Well, that's an understatement. The average person hasn't even defined what left and right without any adjectives are, but it's still the right question to ask. Once you understand that the left represents collectivism and tyranny, and the right represents individualism and freedom, the word extreme, or any adjective suggesting degrees or a spectrum of these social and political conditions, is rendered meaningless. As Ayn Rand always explained, in any compromise between good and evil, it's only the evil side that benefits, since the good has nothing to gain from the evil. Meaning nothing to gain that's good, of course. And this is why, in every imagined compromise between the evil of the left and the goodness on the right, the left always wins. And to borrow a phrase from our show opener, the whole world ends up moving in the same direction, away from freedom and not towards it. And when Stephen Crowder correctly suggested, let's stop trying to find common ground based on a lie, the common ground he's referring to is the center, on a political spectrum that doesn't exist, which is why there is no common ground to be found there. There's no ground at all, common or otherwise. In terms of an extreme leftist, the word extreme is meaningless and suggests that there is such a thing as a moderate leftist or a non-extreme leftist. Just wait till you hear what Jordan Peterson has to say on this coming up shortly. On the stupid and useless political spectrum which the public tries to wade through, the two supposed extremes of left and right are two extreme forms of totalitarianism and tyranny, communism on the left and fascism on the right. Therefore, totalitarianism in the center is moderate. And for anyone to suggest that they're a centrist between these two extremes simply makes them an extreme centrist, who still supports and represents tyranny, a tyranny that employs both communism and fascism. That's why politically, liberalism and conservatism are the same thing. They sit on the same political spectrum between communism and fascism. So how can they even possibly represent anything to do with freedom or capitalism or individualism? They can't, and they never have. A perfect demonstration of theory matching the practice. Both operate on ideologies of the left. The liberal leans communist, the conservative leans fascist, the centrist is happy with an equal dose of tyranny from either side. The so-called political spectrum that the public has been brainwashed into accepting is solely a spectrum of the left, and only in this sense can it have any validity, with both sides in the middle all representing statism, collectivism, communism, fascism, and every form of make-believe leftist BS, all created to usurp power over the people. You know, that's all it is. And what's always missing on the so-called political spectrum? Well, freedom, of course. On a scale where the left is communism and the right is fascism, freedom doesn't exist. Now, returning to the role of ideology, on this side of our upcoming bumper, we'll be hearing Melanie Phillips in a December 7th, 2022 interview conducted by John Anderson. When taken in conjunction with Douglas McGregor's comments on ideology, an amazing philosophical axiom is revealed, though neither of them named it. And on the return side of the bumper, from Jordan Peterson's June 5th interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on why Kennedy is running for the U.S. president, we learn that both of them are diehard lefties, even when advancing ideas of the right.
This is all part and parcel of the substitution of knowledge by ideology. Ideologies of various kinds. Ideologies meaning the idea holds sway, absolute sway. Nothing can challenge the idea. Why? Because the ideas I'm talking about, the ideas that are now the absolute orthodoxy on the left, are ideas which are said to embody goodness, virtue. They're said to embody the betterment of humanity. So if you stand against any of these ideas, if you say there's something fundamentally wrong with any of these ideas, you're not only wrong-headed, but you are evil, because you are standing in the way of the betterment of humanity. Therefore, you want bad things for human beings. You want bad things for the earth, for the planet. And consequently, you can't be argued against. You must be stopped. You must be stifled. You must be refused a platform. Nobody must hear what you say. So what are these ideologies? There are many ideologies. Multiculturalism, the idea that you cannot say Western society or any society is better or worse than any other. Lifestyle choice, the idea that you cannot say any kind of family household arrangement is better or worse than any other, and so on and so forth. Now, the point about an ideology, as I've just said, is that the idea is absolute. It cannot admit to any dissent or challenge whatsoever.
So they actually do believe in a truth, in an absolute truth.
Well, rather like the Catholic Church of medieval period, believe in the absolute truth. But the fact is this, an ideology is therefore inimical to reason itself. Because if you come along with a set of facts and you say, here are facts which challenge your idea of whatever it is, here are facts which show that children are better off with a father and a mother. Here are facts which show that the earth was warmer many millennia ago. Here are facts which show whatever. And they contradict the governing idea of the ideology. You are told, no, we cannot have this. These cannot be facts. You are lying. You must be lying. And we won't even hear these facts. In other words, we're in a situation now where ideology says evidence is nowhere. Now, if evidence is nowhere, then rationality and reason are nowhere. Because you cannot have reason without evidence and without the idea of truth and lies being different from each other. And so we have this really horrific and terrifying situation in which the brightest and the best of us in our universities, the people entrusted with the education of our young people, the people entrusted with the transmission of our culture, the people entrusted with thinking great thoughts, are themselves promulgating a culture which has become inimical to reason itself, and they believe that they stand for reason. They believe, and they tell us, that anyone who objects to any of this is stupid, is an imbecile. Their imbecility demonstrated by the fact that they believe in something as ridiculous as objective truth. But they themselves are presiding over and have made our universities into crucibles not of knowledge, but of the destruction of reason itself. And so what we're living through in Britain and the West, in my view, is even worse than the potential destruction of political liberty, even worse than the destruction of the very idea of the Western nation and national identity. We're living through the destruction of reason. And all around us, we find that rational argument, discussion, civil discourse encompassing ideas which may compete with each other. We may have disagreements and be civil to each other. All gone. Replaced by insult. Insult designed not just to wound, but to silence.
To silence.
To shut down the argument.
Silence, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Today I'm speaking with writer, attorney, environmentalist, and 2024 presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We discuss how the Democratic Party has become one of fear and ideology, its inexplicable conclusion with legacy media and big pharma, and why the era of Kennedy Democrats can not only be revived, but uniting for Americans across boundaries, both physical and philosophical. What made you decide to throw your hat in the ring on the presidency, for the presidency at this point?
Well, I saw the country going in a direction and my political party going in a direction that was very troubling to me. You know, the country one really kind of needs a reboot. But, you know, the role of my political party, I felt like the Democrats kind of got derailed and became the party suddenly and mysteriously of war, when they were always skeptical of the military-industrial complex. They became the party of censorship, which is abhorrent to every definition of liberalism. They became the party of fear, which is against our, you know, traditions. Franklin Roosevelt, in his 1932 inaugural address, said that the only thing that we have to fear is fear itself, and he understood that fear is a weapon of totalitarian elements and totalitarian control. It became the party of the neocons, which again was antithetical. The neocons were Republican, very, you know, belligerent, pugnacious foreign policy about subduing the world and establishing hegemony through violence. It became the party of Wall Street. President Biden has surrounded himself with Wall Street. And the party that had forgotten its roots in the middle class of our country and started regarding people, you know, the cops, the firefighters, the union members, the people who were the bedrock of the Democratic Party as deplorables. And all of those trends and others were disturbing to me. And I actually, Jordan, started thinking about running before it was really viable, before I considered it viable, but just to, you know, to be able to take advantage of the fact that you're protected somewhat from censorship if you're running for president. There's actually federal rules that make it illegal for the network TV to censor presidential candidates.
This leads into another line of questioning, exactly why you're running on the Democrat ticket. There's an analogy, I believe, between what's happened to the universities and what's happened to the Democrats. So what I saw happen in the universities was that the administration took over the faculty. The faculty retreated in 3,000 microsteps, and the administration moved forward. And that happened over about a 25-year period until the administration had captured the universities completely. And then the DEI types took over the administration. And it looks to me like something analogous happened within the Democrats. Like, I worked with the Democrats for a long time in California trying to help
messengers. By DEI, do you mean?
Diversity, equity, and inclusivity.
Okay.
Yeah, the social justice warrior types within the universities. And so what I saw among the Democrats that I worked with was that they were unable to draw a dividing line between the moderate types and the radicals. So, and this is something maybe I'll push you about. So, for example, I went to Washington. I talked to a lot of Democrats, senators and congressmen, about what I saw happening in the broad public sphere, but also in the Democrat Party. And I asked them this question. When does the left go too far? And none of them were able to answer. And even though it's completely obvious that the left can go too far, I mean, that's one of the cardinal lessons of the 20th century. And I suggested that the left goes too far when it pushes equity. And all I got as a response from the Democrats, senators and congressmen alike was, well, the people who say equity, they just mean equality of opportunity. And that's not what they mean. They mean equality of outcome. And that's not the same thing at all. And I saw in that inability to draw that distinction part of the reason that the Democrats have shifted in the direction that you described, in the direction that seems to be opposed in many ways to the best interests of both the working class and the middle class, but also characterized by this incredible strain of illiberalism and corporate fascist collusion, the sort of thing that you document, for example, in the relationship between the power elites and big pharma. And so my sense on the Democrat side, I couldn't shift the Democrats to the point, the ones that I was talking to the point where they would draw a distinction between them and the radicals. It just didn't seem possible. And so why do you think, I don't think the universities are salvageable, by the way. So why do you think the Democrats are salvageable?
Well, I don't think we have a choice. We have a two-party system, and I'm a lifelong Democrat. I feel like my party's being taken away from me in some ways by the kind of ideologies, the extreme ideologies, and really, you know, the departure of common sense that I think troubles you and a lot of, you know, the things that you think about. And but I mean, why do I think it's salvageable? Because I'm talking to people on the street. There's so many people who have responded to my candidacy positively because they see it as return to, being a Kennedy Democrats, the Democratic Party that they loved and that they, that they thought reflected their values, their ideologies, and their best interests, and the best interests of this country, and that was likely to, build an America that they can be proud of, that has moral authority around the world, and, all of the things that we'd like to see, that I think most people would like to see. I think the Democratic Party has been hijacked, as you say, by kind of some extreme ideologies and in some cases kind of irrational, thought patterns. and I think that kind of the idea of returning it to common sense is appealing to a lot of people, and I'm just thinking those things, but they seem to be reflected both in my polling and in the kind of reaction I get from people on the street and on Twitter, and so it's a melange of things that makes me feel that way, but I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, part of the reason that I was willing to work with the Democrats to begin with, and I did that for about 5 years, was because I think like you do, according to what you just said, that, well, you kind of have to work with the institutions that exist, because those are the institutions that exist. And there seems to be some utility in trying to pull the Democrats, let's say, back towards the center as much as that's possible. But I found that, I think we had some success in that regard, but it was in particular and I see this on the conservative side too, by the way, with the unwillingness to see, this is probably more true in Canada even, what is really at the core of this progressive ideology that stresses equity, for example, because equity is an unbelievably dangerous doctrine. And as far as I can tell, it's indistinguishable from the sort of Marxist ideas that swept across Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union and China, for that matter.
You're listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And what we just heard was a philosophical and political train wreck on the part of Jordan Peterson and Robert Kennedy. But before attempting to clean up their wreckage, I first want to warn of the danger inherent in dismissing or rejecting any ideology simply because it is ideology. And in doing so, I find that we are led to a very important and critical principle that must be understood in order to understand all of the irrationality around us and how to reverse it. Consider the following similar observations made by both Melanie Phillips and Colonel Douglas McGregor. While Phillips says that for ideologues, the idea holds complete sway, McGregor reiterated the same observation when he commented that to ideologues, nothing matters but what they believe. Well, the phenomenon that both of them described without identifying it is known in philosophy as the primacy of consciousness, the belief that a person's consciousness is what determines reality and that reality itself is irrelevant. The primacy of consciousness and the primacy of existence are two of the most fundamental polarities of the left and right, respectively, going all the way back to Plato and Aristotle. In simple terms, Plato's primacy of consciousness held that the mind can exist independent of the physical world of existence and that it is what people think and believe that determines the nature of existence, whereas Aristotle's primacy of existence held that reality exists independent of the mind, whether there was a consciousness around to perceive it or not. The primacy of consciousness is a faulty premise from the outset because in order to be conscious, you have to have something to be conscious of. Consciousness without existence is a contradiction in terms because even consciousness has to first exist in order to be conscious. Therefore, we can know that existence exists as a primary to all other factors. The sun and the moon and the stars are not products of anyone's consciousness. It is for consciousness to discover and become aware of such existence, not for existence to conform to consciousness. Now, this may seem obvious to any normal, common sense-oriented person, which makes it a tough one to wrap your head around because those on the left truly and really do believe that existence and reality conform to their beliefs. Just look at the whole transgender and what is a woman controversy, COVID, climate change, electoral integrity, all of it. Now, turning back to the philosophical train wreck that I mentioned earlier, Jordan Peterson is like a deer caught in his own headlights as he continues to see the trees and not the forest of the ultimate political polarity. Peterson explains why he worked with Democrats for 5 years and that you have to work with the institutions that exist. Well, I had no idea that he was such a lefty. In referring to the Democratic Party as an institution, I get it, but he seems not to be aware that political parties are in fact private associations and not institutions. And he suggests that there seems to be some utility in trying to pull back some Democrats to the center and conservatives' unwillingness to see what's at the core of this progressive ideology as in equity, for example. Equity is an unbelievably dangerous doctrine. It's indistinguishable from these Marxist ideas that swept across Eastern Europe, the Soviet Union, and China, he says. Wow, hello, wakey wakey. Hello, Jordan. When will your great awakening ever transpire? The reason that equity is indistinguishable from Marxism is because it is Marxism. Equity is merely one symptom of Marxism, and if all you can ever stay focused on is the single issue of equity, you are completely at their mercy. The left no more believes in equity than it does in Santa Claus. It's the public that believes in equity because it sounds like equality, and that's why the left uses that word to manipulate them. And as for Robert Kennedy Jr., the very idea of trying to reconstitute the Democratic Party into some kind of salvageable political entity sounds completely irrational to me. It is completely and contradictory to what Kennedy says he's fighting for, as is everything else he says. The country's going in a political direction that was very troubling to me, he says, without identifying that that direction he's talking about is leftward, the very epitome of what the Democratic Party stands for and represents. The Democrats got derailed and suddenly and mysteriously became the party of war, of censorship, the party of fear, says Kennedy, apparently oblivious to the reality that the Democrats have not been derailed, but rather they've arrived at their destination. And to want to run for the party that murdered both his father and his uncle is beyond my understanding in any way, to say nothing of the fact that the Democratic Party has been the exclusive party of slavery throughout America's history. The Democratic Party has been hijacked by extreme ideologies and irrational thought patterns, says Kennedy. No, it was founded on extreme ideologies and irrational thought patterns. Thought patterns best expressed by Karl Marx and his followers, thoughts generated from a primacy of consciousness. Now coming up next, on the return side of our bumper, we go to Australia's Maria Z in conversation with Professor Ian Plimer in her June 5th interview on climate change, which was superb, by the way. But the real fascinating part of their conversation that we will be highlighting here is the part with the left and its woke ideology. But first, on this side of the bumper, Mark Levin reacts to the indictment of Donald Trump on Fox News this past June 8th. And as I was listening to him, the only thing I could think of was, how is it possible that Robert Kennedy, or anyone for that matter, could ever align themselves with a party that has done what it is doing to Trump?
If we check in now with the great one, I call him the great one. He's the host of Life, Liberty, Levin, weeknights, weekend Sunday at 9 p.m., top show on the network, the great one, Mark Levin. Mark, I'll just hand it to you. I know you got a lot to say.
President Trump is 76 years old. If the Department of Justice gets his way, he will die in federal prison. Just by one of these counts, conspiracy to obstruct justice, which has a 20-year maximum sentence. This is a disgusting mark on American history for the future to come by these bandits in the White House, by the Democrat Party that don't play fair anymore. They don't want to just win elections. They want to take control of this country. They want one-party rule. And they have used the Department of Justice and the FBI to get what they want. Merrick Garland is a mob lawyer. That's what he is. Jack Reed is a rogue Soviet-style prosecutor. The Presidential Records Act is not a criminal statute, and it was never intended to be. The Espionage Act of 1917 was passed under Woodrow Wilson, another corrupt president. Woodrow Wilson used it to go after his adversaries, and they imprisoned 2,000 people. So I suppose over there at the Department of Injustice, and this clown prosecutor spent a lot of time at The Hague, they probably figured these laws could be used to try and entrap Trump. All these obstruction issues that they claim, where the former attorney general, Bill Barr, comes up here and bloviates about it, and all the formers coming on talking about obstruction, they have them on obstruction. There'd be no obstruction issue of any kind, not even in anybody's imagination, had they not criminalized this case. This is a document case. A document case where a president of the United States or a former president faces 100 years in federal prison? Is this some kind of a sick joke on the American people? Joe Biden says he never told them what to do. Joe Biden had to sign off on this becoming a National Archives case to have it go to the Department of Justice. Who does he think he's lying to? The American people? This is a guy that's got documents from the time he was in the U.S. Senate, for God's sakes, in his garage. I don't want to hear from the legal analysts the technicalities about false statements and obstruction. This should never have been a criminal case. Willful retention of documents. Well, what's the unwillful retention of documents mean? They're throwing all these process crimes and all these crimes that grow out of the criminal investigation against Trump. What did he do with the documents? Did he sell them to the enemy? No. That's why we have an Espionage Act, not the trick of a president. What did he do? Did he burn them all? No. The government has all the documents back. So there is no violation of the Presidential Records Act at this point. But they throw the book at him. They go after his attorneys. They make them testify. They're attorneys under the crime fraud exception to attorney-client privilege. That means he didn't have due process. His own lawyers were being subjected to interrogations. And they had hundreds of in-person people testifying in front of grand juries. Thousands of collections of documents. For what? For what? And they indict him today? They indict him today in Miami? All of a sudden it's in Miami? All of a sudden we have a Florida grand jury? Because the moron in Washington figured out that there are venue issues that could lose him his case. This guy, this prosecutor, he lost 8-0 in the U.S. Supreme Court when they overturned the conviction of the former governor of Virginia because this jerk took a statute and expanded it. A jury in North Carolina wouldn't convict John Edwards because this jerk took a campaign statute and expanded it. And he's taken this case, and he's undermining the country, and he's interfering with a presidential election. And let me be clear, as Jarrett said, the Attorney General of the United States made this final decision. This is not the independent counsel statute. This is a special counsel appointed by the Attorney General under a Department of Justice regulation. This Attorney General, who pretends he's Helen Keller, he made the decision to indict the former president, and they made the decision to interfere in this election. You want to talk about an insurrection? This is an insurrection. And that's exactly what's going on here. Let me go on. Joe Biden is the crookedest crook that's ever been in the Oval Office. Everywhere we look, there's a predicate for a special counsel. They won't appoint a special counsel, even though it's compelled under the law in which they appointed this special counsel, and you're not supposed to appoint a special counsel against your political opponent. You're supposed to appoint one in the case of Biden. 20 shell corporations, $10 million coming from the communist Chinese military, spread out among the family, no businesses to support this. Endless meetings with Biden's, with Hunter Biden's business partners. Bob Alinsky, who ties Joe Biden to the crimes, Mr. Big, Mr. 10%. And what does Biden say? Well, then where's the money? He's asking us, come and catch me if you can. The idea that this man isn't under a criminal investigation and that they criminalized a damn document case.
to go after Donald Trump is sickening. And I would say this to our fellow Americans. Don't be bamboozled by these cable channels and these fools who come on and tell you, well, he's not above the law. Are you kidding me? Democrat Attorney General in New York, Democrat prosecutor in Manhattan, Democrat prosecutor in Atlanta, Democrat Attorney General in Washington, D.C. What do you mean he's not above the law? There is no law. What's going on here is a disgusting disgrace. It is war on Trump. It is war on the Republican Party, and it is a war on a republic. The radical left is doing what the radical left does while they cover up for Biden the way they covered up for Hillary. If Donald Trump is to be charged like this, Hillary Clinton should have been charged with 10,000 counts of obstruction because that's how many emails she destroyed. And 5 counts of destroying cell phones, because that's how many cell phones they destroyed. I'm done, and I'm sick of it.
What you said, you know, Mark, many years ago you said to me, and you said in one of your books, we're in a post-constitutional America. And what you're describing here, when you said they are the ones that are the that are abusing the power, that they've criminalized political differences, that they weaponized the Justice Department. That's what you're saying. They love the term insurrection, and you're saying that's them. They're not abiding by the law. They're not abiding by the principle of equal justice or equal application of our laws. Am I hearing you right?
You're hearing me right, and let me say this. Today, what is today's date? June 8th? June 8th is the day of insurrection, not January 6th. A weaponized U.S. attorney, a weaponized attorney general of the United States have unleashed the full force of the United States government against a former president, the leading Republican nominee to take on the existing president. We have never seen anything like this in the United States. We saw it under Stalin. We've seen it in other autocracies, Marxist regimes, fascist regimes, the Third World. But they have taken the United States of America and they have dragged us into a hellhole. This is embarrassing. It's humiliating. And I'm going to tell you something. There are tens of millions of us. You have crossed the Rubicon twice, which has never been done. And we will never forgive you. Never, ever. And that's the bottom line. I'm done.
You mentioned the climate activists. I have seen some debates. I'm yet to see one where it isn't driven by emotion and, you know, the ideal that the world's going to end in 5 minutes if we don't do something about energy. You know, it's astounding to me the arguments that I've seen that are presented. I'm sure there are some you know, good ones out there, but the argument is just so illogical that I'm seeing from that side. I heard you recently talking about the woke disease, essentially. I added that word in, that's permeated institutions and, you know, universities and modern culture and a lot of the youth. It really is spreading like a disease. And you touched on it before when it comes to engaging with activists. It's all based on emotion, no facts. If you do argue data, there's emotion back. I mean, it's there's just no logic. So how do we overcome that problem when it comes to, you know, all of these woke activists rising up? And what do people need to do about that?
Well, we see an increase in mental illness in society over the last 20 years. And part of that is wokeism. That, to me, is a mental illness because it's based on emotions. It's not based on fact. I think about this a lot. I despair, and I suspect the only way that things will change is if we go into a very deep recession or even a depression or go into a war. I think, folks, I'm sorry to say, you have to burn and burn really hard before the average person is going to say, well, how did we get here? Now, we've seen this before. We've seen it in Argentina. We're currently seeing it in Venezuela. We've seen countries that were absolutely fabulously wealthy drive themselves into poverty by silly policy. So we are seeing a situation which we see so often in history. Every time a society gets extraordinarily wealthy, they do something really dumb to send themselves broke. And we're doing that dumbness now. And I think we have to have a financial disaster before we will change.
It's all well and good to support the next woke cause until you realize that you're not able to function anymore. It's absolute insanity. But Professor Plimer, I'm so grateful to all that you've done to wake up Australians. Obviously, we'll keep fighting this battle, and we're so appreciative of your time and your knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We're grateful to Professor Plimer and anyone who can still think logically and rationally, really. Professor Plimer is not wrong when he talks about the woke agenda being a sign of mental illness. A new study has been published to the peer-reviewed journal Current Psychology, which shows that left-wing authoritarian ideology is linked to both psychopathy and narcissism. You can view that study here, published on the 20th of March 2023, which essentially confirms that people on the left are in serious need of psychological help. As a result of the new data, study authors Anne Crispins and Alex Bertrams have coined a new term for such psychological behaviour. They call it the dark ego vehicle principle. Quote, according to this principle, individuals with dark personalities, such as high narcissistic and psychopathic traits, are attracted to certain forms of political and social activism which they can use as a vehicle to satisfy their own ego-focused needs instead of actually aiming at social justice and equality, end quote. This is what they told SciPost, which is a psychology and neuroscience news website dedicated to reporting the latest research on human behavior, cognition, and society. Considering all of the peer-reviewed studies that the left has depended on when pushing COVID and injection madness, they may want to pay attention to this one.
Of course, the problem with that suggestion is that the left is incapable of focusing on any studies at all, other than the ones they make up. And even those they don't get right or get left. You cannot compromise or debate with a mind that isn't even there. The mental illness that they're talking about originates largely from a mind operating on the primacy of consciousness. After all, an inability or unwillingness to acknowledge and cope with reality is a pretty clear sign of some kind of mental dysfunction. And as I clearly described this form of mental illness when discussing the trans activists and their violent behaviors on a couple of recent broadcasts, the inability of those on the left to connect with reality and existence is a direct cause of their using concepts, words, and definitions that do not correspond to reality. Therefore, they have no knowledge of reality. The entire cult of Marxism is based on ridiculous word associations like the dictatorship of the proletariat and the war between capital and labor, concepts that Isabel Patterson likened to talking about the roundness of a triangle or the squareness of a circle. Marx was a fool with a large vocabulary of words, she concluded. And it's clear that the world is populated by more than its fair share of fools who have allowed themselves to be programmed on a path of self-destruction in a way that takes the rest of us down with them. The problem with the world today is everything that is just left. Now, one of the rarely discussed possibilities preventing many people from identifying freedom as a property or value of the right is that there are those who don't even see freedom as a political issue. They see freedom as the given condition within which we debate our political differences. But if one of those differences calls for an end to freedom, well, where does that leave you? And that's another reason why freedom doesn't exist on the fake political spectrum. But ironically, it's also the reason that makes the political spectrum invalid as a reflection of political reality. So forget about spectrums. Some things are black and white, and some things are left and right. So, on that note, see if you can spot the irony and the hypocrisy of projection unintentionally provided by Bill Maher in today's closing smile. And while you're doing that, don't forget to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white.
But before we get started, I want to thank our audience. Truly, braving perilous weather conditions. It's
It's unbelievable here. I'm going to give you a sense. I'll tell you, it made me realize something. Global warming is a total hoax, and I'll tell you how I know. Because it's cold today where I live. That's just science.